On this edition of the Kerr Report is Ralph Alau, cricket, the Six Nations, a bit of Formula One, a mini bit of tennis, and Kobe Bryant. We're going to start this episode by reflecting on Catalan Dragons' decision to sign Israel Folau. It's a very controversial decision, and for good reason. Folau was sacked by Rugby Australia in May after he posted a photo on Instagram in April that claimed hell awaits gay people. He included gay people in a broad group of other people, but gay people was the one that was picked up upon, and those homophobic comments are, of course, really unacceptable. And in November, he did a sermon, and there is a video about it, and I'm going to read all of this out because it's really interesting to just get Folau's mindset. He's highly religious, and before I go into the main conversation, I've got nothing wrong with the religious views. I can understand Folau's point. I think it's wrong. It's really wrong, but I can see his point. This is what he said in a sermon in November. God's word says for a man and a woman to be together. One man and one woman in the covenant of marriage to be together. That's what the Bible says. That is what Christians are brought up to believe. End of. Next bit is where things get bad with Israel Folau. His comments like this are what makes him so controversial, and why he was sacked by Rugby Australia, and why there is such a big backlash against him. Here's what he said in that sermon. He continues, look how rapid these bushfires, referring to the bushfires that have spread across Australia over recent months, these droughts, all these things have come in a short period of time. You think it's a coincidence or not? That's citing the legalization of same-sex marriage in Australia in 2017. God is speaking to you guys, Australia. You need to repent. Now that bit is complete bullshit. I'm calling bullshit on that, and I'm saying that because it really annoys me to read stuff like that, and it really annoys me that he's been signed by Catalan Dragons. I'm gonna read the views of the chairman from Catalan Dragons, Bernard Goash, because what he's saying, I can get two. I'm seeing all the sides of the story, but the overriding a viewpoint from me is that this is a terrible decision. It really is. Ghosh told a paper. He said, when the moods of each of a side have subsided, we will judge that this player, Folau, is perhaps the biggest coup in the history of the sport and of the club in France. We will then savour the exemplary player he is. He is a good player. Started off in rugby league, played for Melbourne and Brisbane before switching up the codes to rugby union. Ghosh does finish by saying, we do not share or tolerate his opinions, and we are totally committed to making our club and our sport open and welcoming to everyone. Now that final quote, it feels like a sort of a cover quote, like we've signed him. He's a great player. He's a great player. I mean, if we're looking career-wise, yes. But his personality and the fact that Goash himself finishes his quote there by saying we do not tolerate his opinions. I mean, good on Catalan. So they do. Ghosh also said any transgression in terms of whether Israel says anything again. Any transgression will trigger an immediate termination of Israel's contract and a substantial fine for the club. But you go deeper into this. The chairman, the executive chairman of Super League, Robert N. Elstone, is actually quite disappointed. He's very disappointed. He said, Super League deplores the homophobic comments Israel Folau has made in the past, which squarely contradict our sport's core values. I've sought the opinion of informed voices connected to our game, and the majority share my disappointment that one of our clubs has chosen to sign him. There is a strong feeling that the decision to sign him lets down many people connected to our sport. I made Catalan's Dragons aware of those views. However, Super League does not have the authority to veto the registration of the players. And therefore, he says it is satisfied by the due diligence carried out by the Rugby Football League. You've got to remember there was no ban on him in Rugby League. The ban was in Australia. And that's where it gets tricky. Technically, this is fine. But the big problem for Rugby League and the bit that I'm really disappointed in is what message is this sending? That you're going to have a man in Super League who the majority of those within the game deplore. They deplore his homophobic hatred. It's just disgraceful the things he comes up with. And I understand it comes from a religious background. I understand that. But there is a limit. There is a limit between, being Christians, fine. And I know Christians who completely tolerant of the gay community, but Israel Folau goes above and beyond, and that is unacceptable. And it's the message that the game is sending out. The fact that there will be many young people who it's so difficult to come out. It's really difficult to come out. It takes a long time. You have to really think deep within yourself. And it's so difficult sometimes to accept yourself. And there will be people who are watching Israel Folau on the pitch, who listen to his hatred, and I mean, not believe it, but go, I'm not normal. Do you know what I mean by normal? You can't define normal, but not normal. And hated, and that is not the case. That is really not the case. And what is good, and what I was really pleased about, was literally just after the decision was made, Wigan Wanderers confirmed that their round 8 game against Catalans Dragons on the 22nd of March is going to be Pride Day. They're going to wear rainbow socks and rainbow laces, and it's going to be a great day, because if he chooses to be there, Folau is going to have to play a match. Which is technically, well, I say technically, which is celebrating the LGBTQ plus community. Really sorry about that. The support for them, and that's just going to be a brilliant day, and it's a really good thing to do. Another team we've got round two. Huddersfield and oh sorry Wakefield, I do apologize. Wakefield, their second round match on the 9th of February, where Folau could make his first appearance. He's going to miss out the opening game of the season on Saturday against Huddersfield, and he's arriving at the Catalans Dragons later on this week, and Wakefield are planning to do similar. And if that's his first appearance, then what a wonderful thing. An act of defiance, sort of, by saying, you can say these things, but we're not going to listen. And that's what people need. Anybody out there who is gay, is lesbian, is bisexual, is queer, whatever, you need to know that it's fine. And you need to not listen to people like Israel Folau who are spreading this hatred. And it's not right. And I'm going to finally say, yes, Israel Folau, I understand your religion, I understand where you're coming from, I understand your beliefs. But at the end of the day, there are so many young people who are uncomfortable with their sexuality, who read stuff like this, and it's really difficult to read stuff like this. And it's not right. And it is disappointing that Catalans Dragons has done this, but hey, they can. And Folau, I'm sure he will be a great addition to the team, but his background is what lets him down. And at the end of the day, he had his chance. He can't go around saying stuff like this. He really can't. So he will play in Super League, but he is gonna receive all the backlash he deserves, and he does deserve it. and it's going to be wonderful to see Pride Day with Wigan, which has been confirmed in March. It's going to be brilliant to see that. And yeah, it's a terrible decision, but it's done, it's over. We'll just see what happens. But hey ho, Israel Folau there has been signed by Catalan Dragons on a 12-month contract. Cricket now, and a reflection on the brilliant series victory from England in South Africa. They won the series 3-1. Let's go test by test. First test, Centurion, Boxing Day. Didn't go great for England. South Africa won by 107 runs. England got bowled out for 181 in the first innings. And it's at that point, after the New Zealand series wasn't the best. Well, it wasn't the best considering New Zealand won by an innings in the first innings. BJ Watling, Mitchell Santner, BJ Watling double century, Mitchell Santner century just took the game away. Back to South Africa though, and yeah, you look at them getting bowled out for 181, Joe Denley top scoring with 50, and you go, nah, it's going to be another one of those winters, isn't it? Because England haven't had good winters over the past few years. India, they were smashed 4-0. Australia, 5-0. New Zealand, 1-1, including being bowled out for 58 in Auckland. That was 2017-18, 2018-19. Sri Lanka, yes, good. 3-0 series whitewash, but it's Sri Lanka. no offence to the Sri Lankan team, but to be honest with you, they're not the best in the world. England, far too good for them. West Indies. Now, West Indies test team had been going through a rough patch, but 2019, they were still on the back end of that. You thought England could do this? Nah. England were bowled out cheaply again, and I think it was 80 something, and then West Indies got the match, and they won the second test. England managed to salvage the third, but that was another winter where things weren't going too well. Then, of course, this summer, things were changing. Of course, we had the Cricket World Cup first half of the summer, so Test cricket was bumped off. And Ireland, my goodness, being bowled out for 85 against Ireland. That was also quite a dire moment for the Test team. The Ashes was good. I mean, the series was drawn. Both teams had some. Had made mistakes, but England could say they were reasonably proud to get away with a draw 2-2 after winning the World Cup and not being as fresh as they would have liked to have been for an Ashes series. And then New Zealand, which wasn't part of the World Test Championship, the first test, like I said before, they lost. Then the second one was a draw because Joe Root got a double century, but it was just batting, batting, and batting. And we come to South Africa, and the expectation was that these were two even teams. And I would have probably thought we would have had a bit of a closer series in 3-1. But the first test, South Africa were stronger. First innings, Quinton de Kock, 95. He was pulling, hooking, cutting, sixes, fours everywhere. A beautiful little innings. You know, England's bowling did reasonably well. You know, 284 in the first innings, 272 in the second innings. But they were set a target of 376 to win. It started off well, reasonably well. They had the time to do it. But Rory Burns was out pulling on the fourth day. And from there on in, that was the morning session. From there on in, it was a bit of a collapse. So coming out of that, there wasn't too much confidence. And the first day of the second test, England crawled to 269. It was little cameos, 30s, 40s, nobody making a half century, and it looked like a good batting pitch. And you felt that 269 was slightly below par. Well, it was below par. But then South Africa came to bat. Bowled out for 223. Then you thought, there's something in this. There is something in this pitch. And there was something in the pitch. There were plates emerging on the pitch. So then England had a first innings lead of 46. Quite a comfortable first innings lead. And then their second innings was terrific. Dom Sibley, cool, calm, collective, took his own time. 311 balls at the crease, 133 runs, and on the fourth day, Ben Stokes absolutely running riot. 74 off 47. My goodness, he attacked like nobody's business until he was caught by van der Dussen in the deep. But that was good because you had Sibley, who at one point it looked like Stokes was going to get his 100 quicker than Sibley, but Sibley was just staying there. And it was great to see. It was great to see an opening batsman for England, and we're going to come back to that when we talk about the fourth Test match in Johannesburg. I'm not going to spoil things. Let's go in chronological order. Day four of the second Test in Cape Town. Dom Sibley just staying in there. You've got to survive. You've got to get the runs as well, obviously, but you've got to show the bowler. No, I'm not giving you my wicket. Full face of the bat, defence. Getting little runs through the gaps where you can, but you can't get run out if you don't run. That's one of the things I like to think of. I don't know where I picked that up, but it's quite a good thing, isn't it? You can't get run out if you don't get any runs. And then South Africa, it looked like it was going for a draw, but then Ben Stokes, Ben Stokes, what a glorious start to 2020. He had in that test. Took three wickets. Zach Crawley gave us a bit of a scare for the ninth. He caught it, but it bounced out of his hand, and he had to make sure he caught it well the second time. So that was brilliant. It was a brilliant end of the test match. So tense. And, well, Falanta did mess it up a little bit. If he had taken the run at the correct time, you wouldn't. It was something to do with the strike. I 3 weeks ago, I've had some mock exams since, so my memory is, it's good, but it's not that good. If they had taken the run, if Philander had taken the run, then Stokes wouldn't have been at a good end to get his wickets. Third test was the dominant one, really. Port Elizabeth, Ollie Pope, excellent century. Ollie Pope is, oh, he's so brilliant. He's a great find, a really, really great find. And he bats at number six. And well, fortunately for him, because in the second test actually in Cape Town, he top scored was 61 because he came in at number six and had to salvage the pieces, sort of. But in Port Elizabeth, it was the sort of pitch where Crawley and Sibley could just let the ball come to them, and it was very easy. It was very easy for them to play. Yeah, they got caught on the leg side. That's a thing they probably need to pick up on. But 499 for nine declared in your first innings. I mean, it's good. And Mark Wood coming out with that cameo at the end for the last wicket, 42. He was brilliant. England actually coped without James Anderson, because James Anderson had a rib injury during the second test. Yeah, he took his 28th five wicket haul. He can talk, don't worry. 28th five wicket haul. He set the record for the bowler with the most five wicket hauls for England in tests. You had Mark Wood came in, Jofra Archer was back in, and England seemed to do pretty all right. Dominic Best, though, maiden five wicket haul in that first innings where South Africa were bowled out for 209. They followed on. Joe Root, he got four wickets. Yes, he set the new record for tests by being bashed for 28 runs in the over off Keshav Maharaj, who Knows his spin, bowls a decent spin, and could play the spin quite well. But Joe Root was, he kept himself on a little bit too much. Could have got a fifer, but it was fine. England won by an innings and 53 runs at St George's Park. Fourth test. Now, just to prove how terrible England have been at Test cricket over the past 4 years, the first wicket partnership between Crawley and Denley was a century, and they batted through the morning session beautifully. And that has not happened for many a year, and it's great to see, and I hope it continues in Sri Lanka. I mean, like I said before, Sri Lanka's not they're not the greatest opposition in the world, but you hope that there's no stupid mistakes, because I mean, will the pressure be on? Sort of, probably more so in the summer, but this is still the World Test Championship now. No matter what you actually think of the World Test Championship, whether you've actually been following it, because I've just checked before recording this bit, and I can tell you the table. I'll tell you the table because, to be quite honest with you, nobody else is talking about anything. It's just a South Africa 3-1 victory, but this is what it means for the league table. England have played 9 matches. They sit third in the table with 146 points. They are 150 points behind Australia, who sit in second, who lost 2 matches against England, but won every single match in the Australian Test summer. 2 against Pakistan, 3 against New Zealand. And India have won every single match they have played. They've played 7, won 7, 360 points in the bag. So at the moment, it's looking like India, Australia in the final at Lord's June next year. England play Sri Lanka in March for 2 tests. You would expect they would win, but hey ho, England lost to Bangladesh once in 2016. I mean, they weren't that good then, but still, Bangladesh weren't good either. But then Bangladesh had beaten Australia, but were Australia weak on the knees then? They weren't too much so, you know. England have a habit of snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. Sri Lanka, by the way, fifth in the table, but they've played New Zealand. They played New Zealand. They had a good series against New Zealand. They won a match against New Zealand. I can't remember who they've also played. In fact, I'm going to have a quick check. I'm going to have a quick check because why not? They play Pakistan in Pakistan. That was the first Test series in Pakistan for 10 years, and they drew the first Test match, and Pakistan thrashed them in the second Test match by 263 runs. So I would put England I would put England firmly in the running for a 2-0 series whitewash and getting some more points in that Test Championship. And then this summer it's Pakistan and the West Indies. But there is a problem is I mean, I've only followed cricket for the past 4 years, so I've only really known England being a bit dire in Test cricket. The one day stuff's great, and next week we've got the one day series. I'll talk about that briefly in a moment. But you don't get much confidence sometimes with England, but this team brings me confidence. Denley's being dropped, likely to be dropped, which is a shame because he does get the runs. He does get a few runs. Averaged 30 in that series. Got 210 runs at an average of 30. But I mean, I think Keaton Jennings is in the running again. Rory Burns, of course, injures his ankle in a football. He was tackled by Joe Root, I think. Which is always good to get tackled by your captain in football. And Ashley Giles outlawed football as a practice because it caused Johnny Bairstow to have an ankle injury. And then in comes Ben Folkes, superb century as wicketkeeper in Sri Lanka in 2018. So, you know, you can see that point there. So Rory Burns is not going to be in Sri Lanka because he's still recuperating from that ankle injury. I'd say Crawley and Sibley, keep them in the opening partnership. It is a good opening partnership, and I'm sure they will be fine in Sri Lanka against the spin. They can play well against the spin, and there will be a lot of spin in Sri Lanka. We'll do a better preview with the Sri Lanka tour nearer to time. I might actually pop an article up on the raw.com.au, just Just a little bit of the other branding for the writing side. By the way, I'm covering the Six Nations this weekend. I hope to cover it. I'll talk briefly about that in a moment, actually. I'll give you a brief talk about the Six Nations. I can't say very much. Well, I sort of can, but I don't follow rugby as religiously as I do cricket and Formula One. I mean, this has been a 15-minute chat of rugby, cricket rather, that's been off the cuff, really. I've just used some match summaries to just help me rejig along the way. But anyway, 3-1 series victory in South Africa. England won that last Test match by 191 runs, by the way. One Day International series, which I also hope to cover for the Raw. And as I probably said a minute ago, Tuesday, 4th of February. That's 11 o'clock here in the UK, 1 o'clock local time. That's at Newlands. Second ODI is on Friday, the 7th of February, 11 o'clock here in the UK. That's in Durban. The third ODI is in Johannesburg, 9th of February. That one's a slightly earlier one, 8 o'clock. That's on a Sunday though. So they do day games on a weekend. And the T20 series, Wednesday, the 12th of February, is in East London. That's 4 o'clock UK time. Second T20 on Valentine's Day in Durban, back in Durban, 4 p.m. And SuperSport Park is hosting the last T20 of the series. That's Sunday, the 16th of February at 12:30 UK time. And I hope to cover all the T20 matches. ODIs probably do on here. Maybe some Twitter stuff. But that should be a good series because who can guess which was the last ODI England played? I'll let you have a guess, even though I know that the majority of you at the moment have no clue. You might not even be listening to this one, but it might alienate you. But anyway, England, when was the last time they played a one-day international? I'll give you a few seconds. You got it? It was the World Cup final. So world number ones in ODIs are England. South Africa, they've sort of got a strong team. Let's have a look at their one day. So they've got de Kock is the captain. He's replaced du Plessis. Bavuma, Boeren Hendricks, Reeza Hendricks, Ngidi. Ngidi is a great fast bowler. Pekle Kwayo, David Miller. Razzie van der Dussen did impress in the World Cup for me. He did, and de Kock, he can pile on the runs quickly. He's a very aggressive batsman, coming in at 5-6 usually. And England, they've brought Banton in, and Banton's a big hitter for an opening batsman, so that's good. It's in alphabetical order. Captain is Owen Morgan, Moeen Ali, Johnny Bairstow, Tom Banton, Sam Curran, Tom Curran, Joan Gently, Chris Jordan, Saqib Mahmood, David Malan, Matthew Parkinson, Adil Rashid, Joe Root, Jason Roy, and Chris Wokes. So you probably have Root, Bairstow, Banton. I'd put in Tom Curran. Owen Morgan's there as well. Moeen Ali for a bit. Oh, Moeen Ali or Adil Rashid for the spin. It depends on the conditions on the day. Adil Rashid did well in the World Cup with the spin. Root will be in there as well. Wokes is a good bowler. Jordan and Pop Milan probably in as well. Banton could come in as a lower order batsman, but we'll have to see when the teams unveil, when the first teams unveiled on the day of the first ODI. That was a bit sort of, I know what I'm talking about, but it sounds like I don't, and it's a bit of both. So that's the Test series and a mini preview for the ODIs, which are coming up next week. So that's it for the cricket front. And England rather won the 4-match series. Test series 3-1. They take home the Basil d'Oliveira Trophy. Thought it was going to be a closer Test series, but it was still a very good Test series. England's next Test match will be against Sri Lanka in March, and the One Days get underway next week. Right, quick one on the Six Nations. Well, I say quick one, knowing me, it'll be less than quick. Wales come into this as defending Grand Slam champions, and I'm basing a few of the predictions off the Rugby World Cup, really, because that's the last time all the international teams played against each other. But Wales, you'd be stupid if you were thinking they weren't going to be a contender for the championship again, because they've still got a great team. I don't know about the transitioning period because they've got a new manager. Because Warren Gatland has left. He was with them for 12 years. So I don't think that should have any other problem. And they haven't really got any other problem in the first match. They are playing Italy at home. Italy, yes, you look at them in the Six Nations and they're usually the contenders for the wooden spoon, last in the championship. That's why you get all these things about maybe we should have a relegation promotion system, maybe Georgia should come in, and then Japan, the idea of Japan joining might have been floated around after the World Cup. I mean, Japan's got to be involved somewhere. Because come on, they beat Scotland. They got into the quarterfinals of their home World Cup. And they held South Africa in the first half of the quarterfinal, but were smashed afterwards. 27-3. But the point stands that Japan held their nerve. They drew against Ireland 1919, for goodness sake. They can play rugby. And this is a bunch of guys who, I mean, you could tell against South Africa, they're not as big, they're not as bulky, they're not your stereotypical rugby players, but they still managed to do the job in the group stages. So, yeah, that was a little bit of a digression, but it's an important point. We need to consider where we're going to plonk Japan. I mean, you could plonk them in the Rugby Championship, which is where the Sunwolves are. They're in Super Rugby, but they're going to be dropped at the end of this Super Rugby season, which gets started this weekend, by the way. I mean, you could put them there, but they already have a tricky job. It's Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, and Argentina in there, the Sansar teams. That's a legit a bit of a logistical problem in itself with Argentina, the massive distance between Argentina and New Zealand. I don't know where Japan would fit in with a five-team tournament. I mean, and the thing is, with the Six Nations, I mean, do you want to replace Italy with Japan? I mean, who's going to make that decision? Because Japan could do exactly the same thing, but you won't know until you try. I mean, you could trial it. Because a seven nations doesn't work, because what I like about a six nations is that six divided by two is three. So you get three matches, equal, in the weekend. Nobody has a bye, which would totally throw the Six Nations, probably, if you had byes in. But we'll cross that bridge anyway. So Japan, have a think. You can comment any time. There's some voice messages in the there's a voice message link in the description. If you've got anything to add on that, or I'm on Twitter at Joshua_T_Kerr, or come up to me if come up to me in sixth form. Even though that I've been trying to convince you guys, some of you guys, for rugby for ages. Only one of you I know is on board, so thank you to that person. So the first match of the weekend will be Wales, Italy in Millennium Stadium, Cardiff. That's Saturday afternoon, 2:15 kickoff, and Wales. It'll be a tri-fest, methinks. It'll be a good one. Ireland versus Scotland is the second match of the weekend. That's the evening fixture on Saturday. That kicks off at 4:45. I've actually got Ireland have released a team. I've actually got a team. Now I don't know which way I'm supposed to read this out. Because it's listed 15-14 down to one. So, you know what? Let's go from one. Let's go from one, and then you can complain later. Oh, here we go. Here's where I love rugby, but I'm still learning. So, here's where here's where there's some acronyms here as well. I know some of them, but oh, do you know what? I'm gonna read them out. Number one, oh, I can't even read that guy's name. Sean Healy. There we go. Two, Rob Herring, 3, tied Furlong, 4, Ian Henderson, 5, James Ryan, 6, CJ Stander, 7, Josh van der Flyer, 8, Keelan Doris, 9, Connor Murray, 10, Jonathan Sexton at fly half. I know that, he's the captain. 11, Jacob Stockdale, 12, Bundy Aki, 13, Gary Ringrose, 14, Andrew Conway, 15, Jordan Lamore. Replacements will be Ronan Kelleher, Dave Kilgoyne, Andrew Porter, Devin Turner, Peter O'Mahony, John Cooney, Ross Byrne, and Robbie Henshaw. Ireland, I'd say, have the advantage. Scotland's been having a bit of a tough time in recent months. They lost to Japan too. They lost to Ireland heavily in the World Cup. I think the only team they beat in that group stage was Russia. And they got beaten heavily by France as well in the warm-up game. So I'd put my money on Ireland. They're at home in Dublin. They've got a strong team. Rory Best, yes, he's retired, but I'm sure they'll get along. Ireland's been a powerhouse of the Six Nations over the past few years. 2014, 2015, 2018 they won as well. 2016 and 2017 was England, when England were on that winning streak when Eddie Jones was in charge. I think it was 18, 19 games. And last year, Wales got their Grand Slam. And for me, because I'm a sort of a non-off follower of rugby, I'll have more of a picture at the end of the first weekend. But you know, I would say Ireland, strong contenders for that one. And the final match of the weekend will be in at the Stade de France with my favourite referee, Nigel Owens. Go! Oh, he's great. He is a wonderful referee. His put downs and his he manages to make all his decisions really, really fun. He's a really fun referee. France versus England at the Stade de France, Sunday afternoon, 5 p.m. at 3 p.m. Sorry, 1500 hours is 3 p.m. I'd say England for that one. England strong. Coming off, of course, yeah, the upsetting, the bit of a disappointing loss to South Africa, but South Africa were brilliant. Let's not take anything away from South Africa in that World Cup final. They deserved it. They deserved it. England, a win for them would be nice. It would be really great with all the stuff that's been going on about the Saracens salary cap. Saracens have now, it's now, as if it wasn't confirmed already, it's now, the final now has been drilled into the coffin. They're in the championship next year. They've been relegated. Another 70 points docked. They've been docked 105 points this year. And they're on negative 77 points. They need 40. There's 45 points remaining. They're stuffed. That also means if they win the European Champions Cup again, they won't be able to defend their title next year. For Saracens, and it's not good times at the moment. A few people resigning in the management and leadership, and I mean, England have said, and I don't see why they wouldn't stop. They said they're still, Eddie Jones said he still probably gets Saracens players from the Championship, even though currently they only pick them from the English Premiership to ensure that their English players are in the English game. That's a rule that a few rugby associations have. I mean, to be honest, you've been considering 7, 8 of them of the Saracens players are playing for England, get my words out in the end. 7 or 8 Saracens players play for England. I mean, if Eddie Jones goes, no, we're not going to pick you, the team's slightly depleted. England should be able to get that one. I mean, France could have a good day. Like I said, I'm a bit unsure, but I would say England for that one. It would be great to see an England win to just silence the noise surrounding the club game at the moment. I mean, as if that would really affect things, but I suppose it will affect things in the 2020-21 season. But, you know, Eddie Jones has said that he would pick the players, and there's this general sense of, among the Rugby Football Union, that they'll cross that bridge when they come to it. With the whole salary cap thing, basically they were playing that you've got a £7 million salary cap. That's for all your players. There are some exceptions which I'm not going to explain in the podcast. It's a wee bit complicated, but essentially the bottom line is £7 million for your players, and Saracens broke that 3 seasons in a row and have probably broken it this season. And it's kind of like an unfair advantage, really, because they've won the Premiership for the past few years. They've run European Cups, and the other teams in the Premiership were kind of like, you need to relegate them. They were saying 35 points and they're going to come back because they were winning every weekend. You've got to relegate them because it's an unfair advantage that they've got. And I don't know if Saracens are going to turn it around. We still don't know whether any Saracens players are going to jump ship. But the story is still developing on that one. But there was a lot of opposition from the other 11 Premiership teams that Saracens were looking at the start of this month as if they were going to get away with it scot-free. They were going to stay in the Premiership. They'd served their fine and their 35 points deduction, and they managed to claw that back. But I can see I do agree with the other teams because it is an unfair advantage. But they're currently on -77 points. It is a bit much, but hey ho, rules are rules. And I know the adage is rules are meant to be broken, but not in this case. Let's keep it fair. Let's keep the salary cap. But then there's the debate whether the salary cap should exist. But I suppose that's a debate for another time, really. I can see the benefits to it. I can see the not so benefits to it, especially considering footballers get paid millions of pounds a year, and Owen Farrell is on 750 grand a year, and he's one of the greatest players in the country. Great captain for England, great fly half, apart from when all the kicks didn't go his way that one match. That was something, and they had to bring Elliot Daly. Am I getting it right? Elliot Daly, or is it George Ford? George Ford. That's what I mean. See. I'm sort of getting through this, but anyway, that's the Six Nations. Just to recap the fixtures, Wales Italy is Saturday afternoon from 2:15 p.m. I hope to cover that one for the Raw. In the evening, Ireland versus Scotland 4:15 p.m. on Saturday, and the Sunday afternoon fixture at 3 o'clock kickoff, which I also hope to cover, is France versus England. That's the Six Nations this weekend. In the United Kingdom, just to add, Wales, Italy, and France, England will be on BBC One, and Ireland versus Scotland will be on ITV. So that's it for our Six Nations chat. I'll have more of an idea as I cover the game. So check out those articles when they come out, as I hope to write them. Well, it's not all the gear and no idea, but I'm getting my I'm learning my rugby. I'm getting there. Give me some time. Update on the F1 for you now. February is nearly upon us, and that means it's nearly time for the Formula One season to begin. First things first, car launches. Gonna give you out some dates now. They are. Most of them are over the week before the test in February. So Monday the 11th, Tuesday the 11th of February rather. Ferrari will be the first team at the moment to launch the car. Wednesday the 12th will be Renault. Thursday the 13th will be McLaren. Friday the 14th, Valentine's Day, will be AlphaTauri. That used to be Toro Rosso, and they're now AlphaTauri. Also on Friday the 14th is Mercedes, Monday the 17th will be Racing Point, and Alfa Romeo are launching their car on the first day of the first test on Wednesday the 19th of February. Haas, Red Bull and Williams have not announced the dates yet, but Red Bull usually do those before the test. And I'll be giving some coverage to those, as well as the tests. Two tests, first one from the 19th of February to the 21st of February, and the second one a week after, 26th to the 28th of February. Now, I'm not going to be stupid enough to start predictions yet, because there is no need. It's too early. I could spend time doing predictions, but there really is no need just yet. But that's just an announcement about the car launches and the tests. It's nearly time for Formula One. Oh, yikes. Winter is nearly over, folks. Woohoo! I could go on forever, but I won't. Just quickly, well done Dominic Thiem for beating Rafa Nadal to reach the semi-final of the Australian Open. And basketball, of course, it's been a tragic week for basketball, with Kobe Bryant and his daughter killed in a helicopter crash. There were seven other people as well in that, and yeah, really tragic to hear about that, but really wonderful to see the tributes to him. And the there was this brilliant story about a person going to buy some flowers to pop on the little memorial they had outside the Staples Center, and the vendor when asked, you know, can I have the colors of the Los Angeles Lakers, purple and yellow? And when the customer came to say how much is it, the vendor said it's for LA. That's really beautiful to hear of, and it's been beautiful to hear that Kobe Bryant did do so much for LA, and he is a great legend of the sport, a sport that I don't know really that much about, but yeah, it's a shame when you learn more about someone when in their death than when they're alive. But a fantastic career. I do understand he had a fantastic career for the LA Lakers, and a great icon of the game, and he will be sorely missed by the basketball community and the basketball fans, and the people of Los Angeles who have done brilliant tributes over the past few days. So that's it for today's episode, which I've called Sportaholic, and there's a reason for that, because it's been 45 minutes of sports talk, and I hope I've managed to get A, some points across, B, sounded like I actually knew what I was doing, even though in some points it didn't seem like I was, and C, I hope you enjoyed it, and I'll be doing this sort of thing again. Of course, like I said at the beginning, Formula One's going to be our main one. I'll do cricket as well, fill in with some other sports along the way, and we've got the fun stuff on this podcast as well. It's exciting times, my friends, and we're on 5 platforms now. We're on Anchor, Spotify, Google Podcasts, something called Breaker, and another thing called Radioactive. Thanks everybody for the continued support. Thank you for listening. Until next time, it's goodbye from me.